right, well, everybody, welcome back. I'm Deepa Olapalli, the Associate Director of the Seeker Center. And I think we've gotten off to a rousing start with the first panel. And hopefully your fuels up even more after the lunch. And I know some of you have not finished, but please go ahead and carry on while we start the panel here. This morning we heard about an emerging topic, the new social media, and some of the things that we really don't understand. So I learned a lot, speaking for myself on that. Now I'm very happy to turn to our second panel, which is looking at the economic and business and trade relations between Taiwan and the United States, really how to strengthen that relationship. A slightly older topic, but an enduring one, and a very important one, particularly with the Trump administration, where the onus, I think, often falls on some of the other countries to prove why they're such economically attracted to the United States. So, and Taiwan is one of these countries that, like everyone else, has to do that. We've got two terrific panelists to lead us through this discussion, and I'll just introduce both of them and then turn it over to them. We'll start with Riley Walters, who comes to us from the Heritage Foundation, and he's a policy analyst there. He focuses on Northeast Asia and political economy. And as I was we were talking that, you know, most analysts in Washington focus on the security and military aspects of the region, but so it's wonderful to have someone here who actually knows the deeper elements of the economics, which I think we don't do enough of. He has been writing quite a bit recently on this specific topic, which is why I really wanted to have him here. He, before joining the Heritage Foundation, he was a Penn Kemble Fellow with the National Endowment for Democracy. He's also held the George C. Marshall Fellowship with the Heritage Foundation. So joining him, and he'll start us off, and joining him is Rupert Hammond Chambers, who probably doesn't need too much introduction to this group. We're welcoming him back for an event here. He is the president of the Taiwan U.S. Business Council, and he has been in that position as president since 2000. I guess there's no term limit as long as he's doing such an outstanding job, right?
It's a good job.
He's also the managing director on Taiwan for the Bauer Group Asia. And he has been focused on really designing ways in which companies can strategize to do more business in Taiwan-U.S. Interactions. And so with that, I will turn it over to Riley to start us off, and then we'll turn to Rupert after that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the introduction. There we go. Yeah, thank you for the introduction. All right, so when we look at the U.S.-Asia economic relationship these days, this week, last week, there are a lot of moving pieces, and so things tend to be sort of lost in the noise. Obviously, when we're talking about U.S.-Asia economic relations, the biggest piece of this is the ongoing U.S.-China trade dispute. You know, it seems like almost every month there's some new speculation over what the Trump administration's strategy is for sort of reconfiguring the U.S.-China relationship, whether there's some new sort of grand strategy that, you know, is an amalgamation of trade and security. People are unsure of the restrictions that might be placed on bilateral trade and investment, to what degree and for how long. And, you know, we see a lot of this uncertainty in the markets and currency volatility over the past several months. Right now, the U.S. and China have entered the early stages of this 90-day period for negotiations toward ending the trade dispute. by the end of which we'll have some sort of deal, deal to remove some of the bilateral tariffs on both sides, and, you know, to sort of come to an agreement to amend what the Trump administration has seen as years of unfair trade and just unfair practices, mostly on the China side, obviously. It's unrealistic to expect, though, that with now less than 80 days, that anything of significance, something that will, you know, completely revolutionize the Chinese economy away from this state-driven economy, is possible. But, you know, as USTR Lighthizer alluded to on Sunday, you know, one thing that they will accept to a certain degree is even just a promise to reform. There is steps in the right direction. In the U.S.-China relationship, but, you know, it's unrealistic for the U.S. to continue to pursue unilateral trade action against China and expect as robust reform of China as it could achieve without our international partners. You know, obviously, the U.S. shouldn't be solely focused on reforming China, China's economy, and the role its government has in its economy. You know, the Indo-Pacific strategy of the Trump administration is more than just, you know, it's not necessarily a China containment initiative. Trade and economics is a huge part of this free and Indo-Pacific strategy. And this is where partners like Taiwan and the relationship with Taiwan play an important role. Like most countries in the region, though, Taiwan has become more economically dependent on China, trade with China, investment in China, arguably more than some, in fact. Almost 25% of China's total trade is with China. And it doesn't help that Taiwan, again, like most other developed countries, is starved for growth, you know, looking for something more than just 2% plus GDP growth next year. You know, the relationship that Taiwan has with China obviously isn't the same that the U.S. has with China, that the U.S. has with other countries like Japan, or, you know, China has with Japan. Slowly but surely, Beijing has, I'm sure they've talked about this in the previous panels, and as most of you know, Beijing has aspirations of bringing sort of Taiwan back under its arm. And slowly but surely, Beijing is trying to make it harder for Taiwanese to actually engage in economic activity with third parties, while at the same time attempting to win the hearts and minds of Taiwanese businesses and individuals. So, you know, over the last couple of years, we've seen the effects of China's economic leverage, both of private companies and countries alike. I don't think anything stands out more, though, than the effect that it has had on intergovernmental relations. Taiwan has been left out of some significant trade deals, at least, you know, to a large degree in the Asia-Pacific, and, you know, all signs tend to point to China on this. The TPP, or New TPP, Comprehensive Progressive Agreement, Trans-Pacific Partnership, blah, 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 will go into effect by the end of this month. Taiwan, while it wants to be a part of it, is not a part of it. The RCEP, or Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, which RCEP partners want to agree to by the end of next year, again, Taiwan wants to be a part of, but is not necessarily. You know, for TPP, it's countries don't want to promote Taiwan's ascension and anger Beijing. Meanwhile, Beijing, though it's a significant member of RCEP, isn't necessarily backing Taiwan's ascension into it either, into the RCEP. Bilaterally, Taiwan and China do have a trade agreement. However, you know, rightly questioning Beijing's true intent when this deal was signed almost 8 years ago, concerns about the sustainability, transparency, and of course a breakdown in contact between the two sides meant that this deal never went into full effect. Instead, Beijing has shifted over the past several years, not just, you know, with Taiwan, obviously, with other countries. We can go into that maybe more in the Q&A. But Beijing itself and provincial governments, too, are now pursuing new initiatives to sort of incentivize Taiwanese people and investment and businesses in mainland China to sort of spread this bilateral leverage, growth and leverage. Not too long ago, the Taiwan Affairs Office of China State Council initiated a program commonly referred to as the 31 Initiatives. On the surface, these measures range from encouraging economic cooperation, social cohesion, measures to increase investment and give benefits to families who wish to work in China. For example, Taiwan-funded enterprises are granted land use in the same way as mainland enterprises. Taiwanese citizens are also eligible for various cultural awards. And many of the local provinces have also initiated similar initiatives, measures similar to what the state has directed. Fujian Province, Jiangxi, Shandong, they all have similar measures to incentivize Taiwanese investment in those specific areas. A little bit more expansive. The Taiwan Affairs Office is 31 measures, Fujian is 60 measures, but they're all similar to a degree. Given Taiwan's place as a leading manufacturer, such as in the production of semiconductors, many of the measures, specifically at the beginning itself of these measures, the main focus has been Made in China 2025. Despite the news that you might have read this morning, or tweets that you might believe in, whether China will continue to pursue its Made in China 2025 initiative, I still believe that Beijing wants to become the world's leader in developing advanced manufacturing technologies. And again, it's why Beijing's, these 31 measures continue to have Made in China 2025 as a top, the top of the list when it comes to sort of incentivizing Taiwanese investment. Just because, maybe we'll see next year if China reforms its Made in China 2025, that doesn't necessarily mean it'll necessarily have ripple effects down to these other measures, which already do take China 2025 into the mix. So that's sort of the Taiwan-China economic relationship. But what about the U.S.-Taiwan relationship? One thing, if you're not familiar, Heritage has been very supportive of the U.S.-Taiwan relationship, and hopefully I can continue this today as we go through the past 30 years. In 2017, Taiwan was our largest trading partner, $87 billion worth of cross-border trade in services and goods, over $1 billion in cross-border investment. In 2016, U.S. companies made over $4.5 billion in IP revenue licensing in Taiwan. According to some numbers, Taiwan investment makes up more than 322,000 American jobs, and that's just if we're looking at exports. This doesn't include the jobs that are supported through imports. When we look at economic relationships, one thing that the Heritage Foundation has always been advocating for is economic freedom. Countries that tend to have greater economic freedom tend to have greater economic prosperity. Taiwan is actually more economically free than the United States by our measures. If we rank the countries, zero being not free, I think North Korea is the lowest at 5, and we rank 100 as the most free. No country is most free at 100%. I think the highest is Hong Kong. Taiwan ranks 13th with a 76.6. The United States ranks 18th with a 75.7. The numbers, the aggregate numbers, the 75 and the 76, while those are short, it's still enough that several countries can squeeze in between. We can go into this a little bit more in Q&A as well, but I encourage you to go on our website, look up our Index of Economic Freedom. So I wanted to plug that. When it comes to deals that the United States and Taiwan has, we do have a trade deal of sorts. It's our trade and investment framework agreement that we have with Taiwan that we've had for over 15 years now. But we haven't had a meeting of this in the past 2 years, not since October 2016. We're probably not going to have one before the end of this year. This is worrisome, especially for a lot for people who look at the broader U.S.-Taiwan relationship going forward, certainly there are a lot of outstanding issues that folks from the USTR like to bring up regarding beef and pork imports. And this has been a common theme, though, for many number of years. One thing that we would like to pursue, or at least what the Heritage Foundation has been talking about doing, is advocating for something a little bit more with the U.S.-Taiwan relationship. What we would like to see is a high-level economic dialogue with Taiwan. This is similar to what the U.S. and Japan have had, talking about sectoral reform. Trade investment is an aspect of that. Certainly talking about the beef and pork import restrictions, but also the U.S. tariffs on steel and aluminum. These are things that could be focused on the onset, but really it should be more about cooperation going forward. Areas for cooperation, areas for development, digital economy in Southeast Asia as a part of Taiwan's southbound policy, new southbound policy, and of course within the Indo-Pacific strategy and framework. These are areas for benefit. What it would look like is USTR, co-led by USTR and Commerce. The added benefit of this, of course, is the high level that it would bring to the U.S.-Taiwan relationship at a secretarial level, which would be historical, to say the least. Obviously, there are some hurdles with this. Obviously, USTR, folks within USTR do have this sort of institutional barrier to, as I mentioned, continue with the TIFA talks. The Trade and Investment Framework Agreement, TIFA, as well as expanding beyond anything beyond that. You also have a U.S. Trade Representative who, again, at least for the next 80 days and definitely more, is going to be busy negotiating new trade deals with a Congress, specifically a House that is no longer necessarily aligned with the party of the President. So Robert Lighthizer is going to have a very busy next year. And adding more to this makes it difficult, but that doesn't make it any less important in the least. Secretary of Commerce can have a role in this bilateral or co-led agreement. Going forward, I think it's important that both the United States and Taiwan continue to pursue economic freedom, as at least we like to grade it. These are rule of law, government size, monetary freedom, fiscal freedom, trade freedoms, things like that. It doesn't always necessarily have to be on a bilateral basis. We both move in agreements, though we would like to see a free trade agreement with Taiwan. This is something that's 30 years overdue. Unilateral action too can sort of help diverge some of the threats that we see growing from China's economic leverage, even though I think there will be some trade-offs in the near future between the leverage it has and the weakening of its economy, but also that other economies, other governments will want to play a role in sort of integrating both U.S. And Taiwan sort of economic development in the region. And with that, I will stop.